The final interview concerns retinal vein occlusion, the second most common retinal vascular disorder after diabetic retinopathy. It's prevalent amongst older patients with hypertension and is broadly characterized by a sudden and painless reduction in vision. Occlusion most commonly occurs in a branch of the retinal vein, but may occur in the central retinal vein, in which case the prognosis is more serious. Victor Chong, a consultant at the University of Oxford specializing in retinal vein occlusion, talks to Deborah Lee about the diagnosis, progression, prognosis, and treatment of the disease.
Can you remind us how retinal vein occlusions develop?
Well, retinal vein occlusion is broadly classified into two separate groups. One is the central retinal vein occlusion and one is the branch retinal vein occlusion. And sometimes they're referring as CRVO and BRVO. And in most cases, the way to think about an occlusion is that the blood flow into the vein has reduced. And that could be caused by a variety of different things. And most commonly, in diabetic, in hypertensive patient, the blood vessel is affected and is slightly damaged and leading to the turbulence and then leading to the occlusion. However, in some patients with central retinal vein occlusion, the changes are anatomical. And because the blood vessel coming into the optic nerve do slightly differ how it comes in different individuals. And in some individual, it might well just be that the angle of coming in is slightly incorrect or slightly more acute. And because of that, there might be already more turbulence in those areas. And obviously, that if you have another underlying condition as well, combining the two with developing the condition at a much younger age. The other group of patients that happen in branch retinal vein occlusion are usually happening after a particular arterial venous crossing, when the retinal vessel, or the artery and the vein, crossing over each other. And in those areas, either because of diabetic or because of hypertension, they don't even need to have an occlusion, but just the artery wall becomes thicker, and that can press on the retinal vein and leading to the occlusion. In central retinal vein occlusion, there is a high association with glaucoma and ocular hypertension. And partly because when the pressure of the eye is high, they can probably cause a reducing the blood flow on the optic nerve head. And especially in those patients already have a compromised anatomy, and then that might be actually more likely to cause a central retinal vein occlusion. That doesn't seem to be the case in branch retinal vein occlusion, but it's more specific for central retinal vein occlusion.
Does it tend to happen in older people?
Well, it tend to happen to older people partly because diabetic and hypertension are common in older people. As I mentioned earlier, we actually quite often see patients who are younger, but they mostly have the central retinal vein occlusion. Most of those patients are quite likely is there is some anatomical developmental differences. So because of the optic nerve development, the blood vessel coming in, even that slightly different angle can potentially leading to a slower flow. And that actually leading to the fact that quite a lot of patients, although that in percentage-wise is small, but in number-wise is big, that we have a younger patient could have central retinal vein occlusion with absolutely no systemic complication because the changes are probably local and anatomical from development. But you're right, the majority of cases other than that are usually in older people.
In the people that you suspect developmental problems in, is it likely to also affect the other eye?
Yeah, I think that is the risk of the other eye. And again, the association is not very strong because you see, although I say that, you know, it's developmental, the other eye are developmental randomly as well. So the blood vessel coming in are slightly differently. So although it might be coming in the wrong angle, so to speak, in one eye, but you might be coming in the right angle as in the correct way of coming through without leading to turbulence.
What's the relationship between retinal vein occlusion, macular edema, and neovascular glaucoma?
If you think about it this way, that when blood vessel was blocked, and particularly that when the central retinal vein occlusions happen, they're quite often that there is edema in the macular region. And similarly, that in branch retinal vein occlusion, if the temporal branch is involved, then again, that they could have macular edema. The added complication of neovascularization is that in branch retinal vein occlusion, they quite often, because of the ischemia, leading to a localized retinal neovascularization. And that retinal neovascularization can sometimes cause bleeding as a form of vitreous hemorrhage, and that obviously causing the patient problems. In central, interestingly, they don't tend to give retinal neovascularization, but they seem to more often giving neovascularization in the iris, sometimes called NVI, and that will leading to neovascular glaucoma, which is really the most horrid complication for retinal vein occlusion.
So is the edema that the occlusions produce your major problem?
Well, as I say, that the you can say in a two different way, that macular edema is a more common but significant problem in inducing visual loss. However, that neovascularization is a less common but more serious complication. So I think it depending on what you mean by more serious, you know, and more important. Yeah, I think both are important, and I think that we could probably talk about that slightly separately.
What do you do about the edema then?
Well, in macular edema, historically, we could do laser treatment for those involving branch retinal vein occlusion. We have previously study have shown that it would be effective with branch vein occlusion. In a similar study, that did not show any benefit for central retinal vein occlusion, so only for branch for laser. But recently, there's two separate drugs have been licensed for that indication. And one is called Oshidex, which is a steroid implant, and one is Lucentis, which actually we've been quite familiar with Lucentis for a long time for its use in macular degeneration. But it's the same drug, but it's been licensed for retinal vein occlusion.
And do these anti-VEGF drugs help with the macular edema and the neovascularization?
Well, as I said, that we'll focus on macular edema first, and we can come to neovascularization a bit later. And in terms of Lucentis, the studies have shown that you can significantly reducing the edema, and but more importantly, can actually bring in benefit in terms of vision. Now, bear that in mind, this is the topic of a group of patients who have edema, but you have very little ischemia. Mm-hmm. So once you got ischemia and permanent damage, obviously that would not be reversible by anti-VEGF agents such as Lucentis. However, for those who are not ischemic but mainly have just edema and leakage, then they will be beneficial. But do bear in mind, in the study, they talk about a lot of injection. So in the study that they need monthly injection for the first 6 months, and then still need another 3 or 4 injection in the second 6 months. And so we're talking on average something about 9 injection. And indeed, some patients actually of mine need 12 injections, you need it every month, you know, and other 6 injections seems to be enough. So again, there is always a variation, but in general speaking term, that we're talking about a minimum of 6 injections and up to a maximum of 12, averaging around 8 to 9 injections in the first year. And we now know, even in the second year, people still need something like 3 or 4 injections. So we talk about quite a large number of injections. And certainly it's important for the patient to be aware that this is the course of treatment rather than 1 or 2 treatments that will solve their problem.
Is this available under the health service?
Lucentis currently is not available in the health service, but they are going through the NICE guidance at the moment. And interestingly, in Scotland, Lucentis is available for central retinal vein occlusion. But again, obviously that I hear from some of my Scottish colleagues, they still struggle to get it through despite that it was officially available, so to speak. But in England and Wales and in Northern Ireland, they are still going through NICE at the moment.
You mentioned that there was another steroid implant. What's the story on that?
Yeah, Oshidec is a slightly different situation. Oshidec is a steroid. But differ from the steroid that we used before, this one was specifically designed to be inside the eye. And the way to think about this particular implant is almost like a soluble aspirin. I think it might not be the best example to think about it. But what happened is that when you put a soluble aspirin into water and then you will fuss it out, eventually the whole tablet disappeared. And obviously that in a soluble aspirin, that happened over like, you know, 1 or 2 minutes. But this implant, this happened over 9 months in the eye. So it's a kind of similar thing that it will eventually completely dissolve, but it takes over 9 months to dissolve. Slightly different from the soluble aspirin is that the implant was dissolved in such a way that you give a much higher dose in the first couple of months and then come to a maintaining dose for another 3 or 4 months. And as I mentioned, that although it takes about 9 months to dissolve completely, but then, you know, in the last 2 or 3 months, there seemed to be virtually no drugs was actually released. So in a way, that is how it appears to happen. There's quite a lot of drug in the first couple of months, and then some more drug in another 3 or 4 months, and then there was no drug released, but then they are starting to disappear completely. But it will go completely. That is how that implant works. Although it's implant, it's so to speak, it's not like a cataract implant to stay there forever, and it's not like other implant, but it is the one that will completely dissolve. The action is slightly different because it's a steroid, and steroid reducing inflammation, and also that we know the steroid has some degree of anti-VEGF function as well. And again, there is a lot of debate about whether the difference between anti-VEGF and steroid. And indeed, there is now several head-to-head study to compare the two drugs. Bear in mind that those two drugs was developed separately, so they were comparing with the so-called standard treatment at the time, which quite often is no treatment or have some laser treatment, but they are not comparing to each other. And now that they are comparing with each other, but we obviously need to wait for the study to come in before we know that how they would compare with each other. And in fact, in Oxford, that we are carrying out one of those studies currently.
And so the patient would have to be registered in a study. They couldn't just routinely have it through the health service.
Right. So at the moment, that Oshidex is available in the health service as part of a NICE approved process. Again, Oshidex was licensed before Lucentis. And because the less frequency of injection, that got approval from NICE. So yes, you can get Oshidex within certain condition. And in fact, the condition is actually quite general. Virtually most people that can have Oshidex in the health service.
Do people do laser anymore for macular edema?
Well, certainly for branch retinal vein occlusion, and even in NICE guidance, as I mentioned earlier, that for patients who could be laser, in branch retinal vein occlusion, they should still be laser first and before going for Oshidex. But in many cases, that the patient that might have a lot of hemorrhages, which is very common, and they will not be able to have laser because the hemorrhages is there. And for those patients, we would go ahead to treat with Oshidex first in the health service, which is under the NICE guidance. And subsequently, we would then do laser once the hemorrhage goes away. This is still a territory that we are not certain because, again, there's no clinical trial to guide us on that specific issue. I have to say that my gut feeling is that for those patients that once the hemorrhage is gone, once the edema is settled, then laser might still have a role to reducing the number of injections. So it's not necessary to improve the outcome, but might be reducing the injection. Now, obviously, there might be a side subject here. You might know that I have a strong interest in doing something called micropulse laser, which is a non-scarring laser, comparing with most other patients that the laser is actually causing scar. And in particular, with micropulse laser, I strongly believe that because it doesn't cause much scarring on the retina, but you might be able to dry up the retina. So in other words, is that, as I say earlier, it might not improve the visual outcome, but you might be able to reduce the frequency of injection. Now, that is a gut feeling rather than a scientific proof. We haven't actually done the study for that, and it was something that we are trying to get people interested in doing that.
So, just to summarize, we've got a number of treatments for macular edema, and these are available, some of them under the health service and some not.
Yeah.
The ophthalmologists are still learning the most efficient way of using them.
Yeah.
But patients with ischemia cannot qualify for any of these treatments.
Right. I think that when we talk about ischemia, we also talk about two different types of ischemia. You know, medicine is always make life more complicated when we think about it. One is macular ischemia. And again, you're absolutely right for that. There is absolutely no treatment that actually would be able to help a macular ischemia. Although, fortunately, there are a lot of people who have some degree of macular ischemia also have leakage. So we can at least treat the leakage part. However, that once the leakage part is treated and is still the patient still have poor vision, and that is quite likely due to macular ischemia, and unfortunately, currently, there's no treatment. Because central retinal vein occlusion, when the ischemia is very extensive, and the ischemia is also quite often more to the anterior part of the eye, in the front part of the eye, and because of that, causing new vessel on the iris, and sometimes that we call it rubeosis. And because of the rubeosis, then those abnormal blood vessels can block the angle and leading to something called rubeotic glaucoma. And really that is the most horrible complication for the patient because not only the patients are blind from the vein occlusion, but the rhabdoid glaucoma can put the pressure so high that the eye will be very painful, and quite often the pressure is almost impossible to manage. Imagine that the fluid that we need to get out of the eye was completely blocked by this normal blood vessel in the angle of the eye. So that is a horrible complication that we try to avoid at all costs.
With all these treatments that are available, and obviously it's complicating deciding what the patient should have and the timing of it, what's happened to the drills in terms of referring patients in?
Historically, quite often the people say that in retinal vein occlusion, we can wait for 3 months before you even do any treatment. And certainly in central retinal vein occlusion, in the old days, there's no treatment. And even if there were treatment, it's to preventing rhabdoid glaucoma. So historically, retinal vein occlusion are not seen as the urgent referral. And that has actually completely changed. Certainly that now that we are taking retinal vein occlusion is exactly the same as macular degeneration. That some years ago, macular degeneration, yeah, you still want to refer, but there's no degree of urgency. But now that we have fast-tracked macular clinic and allowing macular degenerative patient to come through. And indeed, that most hospital now are using the same mechanism in the macular degeneration clinic to channel through the retinal vein occlusion patient. So they will still be seen within 2 weeks. And that has actually been a model which is workable because they already have a historic pathway to do so. And certainly in Oxford, we do have a similar kind of conceptual pathway that patient that will need to be referred urgently, and they will come for a fast retinal referral clinic. And again, obviously locally, there might be some differences, but optometrists should now refer retinal vein occlusion as a matter of urgency, and obviously in particular, those who have visual loss.
Does that apply to branch vein occlusion or just central?
I think that, as I mentioned about the word visual loss, you know, so I think it's true that if there's no visual loss, and in particular the branch retinal vein occlusion does not even involve the macular region, then obviously the urgency is much less. And indeed, that you probably still need to refer in just to make sure that it's the right diagnosis, but those are not urgent to a certain extent. However, that what we're talking about is those who got some degree of visual loss. The degree of visual loss might be mild, and it's actually not uncommon that it's quite mild in the early phase, but then they might get worse. So again, if there is any visual loss, or if there is any involvement of the posterior pole, then definitely that they should be referred as urgent, just as similar to central retinal vein occlusion.
It's nice to have a rule.
Thank you. Thank you, Deborah and Victor. Again, further information can be found on the OQ webpage, the Docket app, or your CD insert.